Hi, this is Damon Pastolka, host of The Faces of Business, where I talk with interesting people sharing life and business experiences to entertain, engage, build community, and provide information to help others succeed. If you're interested in learning more about one of our guests or how we are helping business owners generate wealth and build businesses they can sell or succeed at Exit Your Way, you can find more information on our website, exityourway.com. Or by contacting me directly, Damon@exityourway.com. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, everyone. Welcome once again to the Faces of Business. I'm your host, Damon Pastolka, and I am excited today because today we've got Josh Melanchuk from JM Tax Advocates here today. We're going to be talking about reducing business property tax obligations, something that many people don't think about, but can be very beneficial if they do. Josh, thanks for being here today. Are you hearing me, Josh?
I'm hearing you just fine, Damon.
Okay.
I kind of faded in.
Okay. No worries. Out a little. No worries. No worries.
So I'm going to kill my Outlook here.
There you go. That'll help us get going. Well, Josh, you got me now? There we go.
Can you hear me?
Is it working?
Okay.
Yes, I can. All right. Got it. We're sitting there talking for, this is how it works. You know, it always works this way. We're going to talk for a long time beforehand and then we're going to go live and it's going to screw up for us. But anyway, we'll get past it. So Josh, we always like to start out with talking about how you got into property taxes. I mean, what really led you to where you are today? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, anyone that says, I went to school thinking someday I'm going to become a property tax expert is probably lying because there's no coursework in college. There's really nothing out there about property tax other than through some trade associations that I belong to. And so, it's always kind of by accident, right? In my case, I was a board staff auditor in regional accounting, out of school. And, I was going to pursue anything other than, being involved with financial audits where you're in heavy work hours, lots of overtime, lots of travel, and, low percentage wage raises. And so, I was looking for something else to do after a few years in that world. And the firm that I was working with at the time bought out a consulting, state and local consulting group that needed someone to come in and intern and learn the trade. And so I thought, well, what the heck, I'll try this out. Because it's just a matter of time where I'm doing it, anything other than, financial audits. So gave it a try, really liked the area, was involved with reviewing property taxes, with presentations in front of city and county government for some of the incentive requests. And, it was just kind of this constant learning trial by fire environment, very unpredictable, but it suited my personality. And so, ever since then, and 28 years later, I've kind of stuck with the area, stuck with the practice, become a property tax expert. And a lot of that's kind of learning on the job. A lot of that's school of hard knocks, learning through trial by fire and just learning the trade through being around a lot of great people in Big Four accounting and regional accounting in these specialty practices that exposed me to some of the largest industrial and commercial taxpayers in the United States, and kind of helping with delivering solutions to each one of them.
Cool. So, I mean, no, like you said, no one probably goes to school to be a property tax expert, but what are some of the things that really interest you about it? I mean, because obviously you spend a lot of time getting to understand it.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy saving people money, and I enjoy adding value, and I enjoy sharing knowledge that really fits a need with a company. It's very rare that I'll run into a business that has an in-house property tax expert or an expert that can take care of an incentive negotiation independent from the company. And so I really enjoy kind of training our clients, adding value, becoming a member of their team to share what I know and help navigate them through what could be an extremely challenging experience because of the traps and pitfalls that are involved with everything that we do, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like you wouldn't ask your general physician to do open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, why would you want your generalist legal counsel or generalist CPA to take care of an area that really requires a true specialist approach and a seasoned navigator for the process to go well and the best possible outcome?
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about property taxes and you think about, you know, large property holders, multiple states, all these other things, oftentimes you still just think that's just a bill you pay. I mean, if it says $5, you pay $5. I mean, there's, I think many businesses treat it that way. But are you saying that if we know what we're doing or we understand all the things that we can do, we can actually make that bill different? I mean, because a lot of people think it's just, you know, it's, it says $10. That's all we got to pay.
That's right. Check. Yeah, most of the time, Damon, before we get involved with a business, you know, that company controller is just paying the bill, just like you said. And hopefully they're paying it on time to avoid the 10% penalty or so. But that doesn't always happen either. They may miss that deadline and then they're kind of sunk, right? And so it's really always our goal to transform that pay the bill management style for property tax management to be one of transformation through process changes that almost always involves a review process, accountability through filing protests and working them through the process with government officials at the county and state level, and really a lot of advocacy and a lot of negotiation aspects that go into effectively moving that needle south with the bill level that you're paying. You know, in some cases, the states will also tax business personal property. In other words, their furniture, mm-hmm. fixtures, manufacturing yep. equipment, yep. maybe even the inventory, right?
Yep.
So a lot of times those returns that report the property will be filed by a company CPA with very little questioning, right?
Yeah.
So in essence, what we do is we'll question everything. We'll question all the assets. We'll look for ways to improve some of the categories. And, you know, we're looking at sometimes tens of thousands of line items and with a boots on the ground investigation approach to make sure that that company is not paying a penny more than they have to. And then also looking out for exposure, in other words, omitted property that may get them into trouble with underpayment penalties. So you know, we're looking for the right answer with everything that we do. And sometimes that answer is, hey, you're underpaying. You better get this fixed before you have an audit. In most cases, though, I'd say about 80% of the time, we find that businesses are overpaying their property taxes on average by 20%. And so what we do is come in and fix that through a very thorough review and investigation that questions everything, that holds the government accountable for doing the right thing, that puts the business in a position where they're paying fair, accurate, and equitable property tax amounts as part of their annual filing and annual reporting and payment. And that's probably one of the aspects of property tax and property tax management that can be so troublesome for a capital intensive business, because, you know, every year that they have an overpayment and they're not fixing that overpayment, well, that's not going to get fixed by itself, right? Unless mm-hmm. you have someone coming in that knows what they're doing, that sees a navigator who knows how to fix the issue properly, that business will continue to overpay every single year. And so that $50,000 mistake, you know, and 10 years later, that's some real money. I mean, that's $500,000 you could have put back into your workforce, put business automation initiatives in place and funded part of your capital budget for a year, you know. So it's important, and it's an area that's a heavy burden for businesses, but so often overlooked because not many people know what to do about it and know how to fix the issues.
Yeah, you brought up a ton of stuff here. So I want to go back through some of my notes, because I didn't actually understand a lot of this can happen, but now that I think about it, I'm sure that it is. You said one thing about, okay, we get the tax bill every year, but you talked about a review and protest. Let's talk about that with our property taxes. So reviewing and then doing some sort of protest. What do you mean by that? How does it work? You know, what are we doing in that step? Because it's interesting to me.
Well, so each state and maybe even county within the state, it just depends on the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has an appeal deadline that pops up every single year, along with the business personal property tax filing deadline, and then possibly an amended return deadline to fix any errors in that business personal property return. And then thirdly, there may be a business personal property valuation notice that has to be appealed by a certain timeline. Mm-hmm. In some cases, the window to file an appeal can be as short as 2 weeks. And, you know, and so by the time you get your notice in the mail, it may be too late to do anything about it. And then you're locked into your excessive property tax payment for an entire year. And so it's extremely important. And this is something that we undertake whenever we get to know a client and they want some help, you know, with their property taxes. We'll calendar out the anticipated deadline to file an appeal mm-hmm. and make sure that, you know, we're aware of whether it's a statutory deadline, which means it's just one set date every year, doesn't change, mm-hmm. right? Or whether the deadline falls along when notices are issued, which are completely different typically than the tax bill itself. So the tax notice will come out at a certain time of the year for their building and land assessment. And then possibly also with the personal property assessment. And then it's up to the business or their consultant that's representing them to make sure that they're filing a petition form to keep that assessment open for review and change. And if they miss that deadline, there's really some limited options, typically no options depending on the state, to ask for forgiveness on missing that deadline. In fact, it's almost always a never don't ask situation in about 90% of the time.
So you had your chance, you missed it. So bad for you, but next year you can do it.
That's right. So you have to know your state. You have to know the process for filing your petition. And you also have to know the rules of the road. Once you file the petition, there's requirements that follow to keep your petition what's perfected or alive and kicking is probably a layman's way of putting it. There's certain requirements that if you miss those requirements, you're done. And there's no way to keep your petition open. It's just denied.
Yeah. Wow. This is cool. Got to write some more notes here. Ask some more questions. So, first of all, I didn't know you could even appeal your property taxes from a business standpoint and do that. That's cool that you can. Sounds like there's some intricacies, though, in if you decide to do it, in the timing you've got to do it, and how to keep it alive, as you said, without them just, you didn't do this, so we just close it down. But, I mean, what happens in this appeal process? I mean, what are we doing there? Because are they just saying your property's worth this much and so it's up to you to prove it isn't? Or what are we doing in that process?
Well, Damon, let me first of all take a short step back. So the common misunderstanding that we see, you know, more often than not is that businesses think they can appeal their property taxes. And actually, that's not correct. You cannot typically appeal your tax bill. You can only appeal your assessed value, okay, which is a function of your tax bill, right? But if you miss your notice, you're typically done once you get your property tax bill, which may be a year later.
Yeah.
That you discover, man, I just got hit with a big assessment increase. And my property tax bill just doubled. Well, guess what? If you waited to the bill, it's too late. You know, so you have to get ahead of that by calendaring when that notice of value is coming out. Now, you know, going to your question, the formula for challenging your assessment can differ depending on the state and depending on the property tax type. You know, so with the real estate, for instance, you're almost always appealing the assessor's determination of fair market value. In other words, if I were to sell the property as of the valuation date, which is typically January 1st of the assessment notice year, right? What would be the anticipated price that I could attain, you know, in a willing buyer, willing seller type environment? And so, you know, there's appraisal techniques. We don't need to go into all of them around, you know, what would be a good way to estimate market value between the cost income and sales comparison approach. But they're all used to kind of estimate value depending on the property type. The gyrations for determining that can look a little different, right? So, but the business personal property really is going to be a function of what the states have typically adopted for economic life multipliers and depreciation multipliers for certain assets. It can also be a function of what the state and or county would actually tax. You know, for instance, inventory is not taxable in every state. And so you have to understand that in certain states, certain assets may be taxed as personal property and not as real estate, or they may be taxed as real estate because of them being permanently affixed. So there's some real nuances with your business personal property filing to even get the starting point with what my reportable cost basis should be before I apply market depreciation and then come up with the value for that. And so each state kind of has their own way of taxing property. Heck, even the type of property and what is taxable is state driven as well. You know, another, for instance, beyond the inventory is not every state taxes business personal property for the equipment. And certain states only tax the real estate and everything else is exempt and not even reportable. You don't even have to file a business personal property return. So there's a lot of variation.
Wow.
And you got to know your state. You got to know what the state is taxing you for. And then you have to know how to report correctly and how to estimate value better than the assessor can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I'm thinking about it, what you said is exactly it. You want to be better at predicting the value than the assessors just to make sure that you know if they're right or not.
That's right. And Damon, you know, one other kind of complexity that comes about is that so often I hear this comment from companies that, you know, hey, you know, I ask about property tax. The answer I get is, well, my CPA, my accountant is taking care of this for me, right? And what's typically happening is that CPA is filing their business personal property return, hopefully on time. It's likely not, there's no review process at all in the same way that we would review the property. And that company is left overpaying their property tax because they think they're covered, right?
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of reasons for that. The first being the inexperience. You know, you have a generalist, you know, taking care of a very specialty area with a lot of nuances. Mm-hmm. But the second is credentialing. And it really is important to understand that in certain states, you can't just be a CPA. You have to be something else. And it may be a certified tax representative for property tax matters. In other states, you know, you have to be credentialed with a group called the Institute for Professionals in Taxation, and then that carries reciprocity. I mean, each state kind of has their own pitfalls with tax representation for property taxes. And if you don't carry that credential, you literally cannot practice in front of that county board or state board for a petition.
Yeah.
And so if that CPA firm doesn't have those on staff, which they typically don't, their CPA can only get them so far. You know, by comparison, you know, I actually, beyond just the accounting training, I actually undertook the road to become a certified real estate appraiser, mm-hmm. which required a lot of supervision by a fee appraiser, about 3,000 hours of appraisal experience through doing appraisal work, and just a lot of credentialing, a lot of coursework, about 180 hours of coursework with two levels of tests at the state level. And it was probably on equal footing as far as the complexity as getting my CPA license. And so it's a very difficult road, but guess what? That was great training for me to estimate value when I'm navigating, you know, through an appeal process, right?
Yeah.
And to be able to put together some market analysis to determine even whether we should file an appeal or not. And so most accounting firms and law firms, you know, don't have someone with that valuation background to be able to undertake that type of study. And so, you know, having that background has really been helpful to be able to practice in this area. But again, it's something that takes way too much time, way too much effort. And most accounting firms and law firms don't have an in-house appraiser.
Yeah. Well, I think there's still what it that comes back to the beginning. And when we very first started the conversation is it's a bill that most people just think they should just pay without asking. Right. And, you know, you come into with someone like yourself, understanding what you do about the things you do about property taxes, about business tax and evaluation, property valuation. So, you know, who really, we're sitting here talking about property taxes and most people are going, well, that doesn't mean it, you know, I just pay my property taxes, right? I pay my property taxes, but who really should be looking at this? I mean, who is this going to make a difference to that you're going to say, listen, you might be leaving serious money on the table?
Yeah, if I'm a company CFO or controller and my bonus is tied to the P&L, you know, property tax is a big burden. It's a big line item on their P&L. And if I'm going to improve my bonus by lowering the property tax bill, I care about that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people don't realize is that property tax can be the number one or number two tax burden to a capital intensive business. So, again, if I'm the CFO, I care about that line item and I want to bring someone in that knows what they're doing that can help drive that line item downward.
Yeah. So when you talk capital intensive, we're talking about processing, manufacturing, other kinds of business. What are the typical kind of businesses where you guys get called into?
Yeah. So the businesses that generally pay the most amount of property taxes would include manufacturers. It would include real estate investment trusts with large holdings of commercial and industrial property. The senior care operators that are would have a large property tax bill, big offices, apartments are going to pay a good amount, hotels, especially resorts, they're going to have a humongous property tax bill, usually in the millions for each one of those properties.
Wow.
Utility companies can be in the hundreds of millions of dollars because of all of their power generation equipment to manufacture the energy and then drive the energy through their power lines or underground telephone lines in the case of the telephone companies. And so those are the ones that typically feel the property tax bill every year.
Yeah. And you didn't, you know, you don't even think about that really about the utilities or resorts or hotels in the fact that, you know, like a resort, they cover a lot of land. It's usually desirable land. So therefore valuable. And that could be a significant part of their operating budget every year. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course, yeah. Wow. So it's always interesting.
The retailers can also feel a big hit too, especially the large malls that you know have to heat these enclosed malls, these behemoth malls that have a huge energy bill along with property taxes.
Yeah,
they need to be looking at every way that they can drive that material cost downward.
Wow, that is so interesting because I tell you, Josh, every time I learn something talking to one of the guests here, it opens so many new horizons because you're like, you don't really think about that in these instances you talked about where tax bills are really concerning. First of all, it's a big number on your overall P&L or where you're spending your money. But then that there are specialists like yourself that can say, okay, you do have to pay $5 million in taxes a year now on your property taxes. But maybe we can do something about it because like we said before, most people just go, you got to pay $5 million. I've been paying my taxes like they tell me every year on my property. And they think there's not anything you can do. So when you come into this situation and you go, okay, we're in a mall, we're in one of these resort, whatever it is, you're going to go through this review process with them. Are you trying to then just validate that they've got the values right? Is that what really what this is? And then it's a appeal of the valuation that the government entity is trying to put on the property?
Yeah. So, Damon, what we do is assume the assessment is wrong until we can prove it right and prove it otherwise.
There you go.
Right? So, yeah. So we'll come in eyes wide open, you know, review the calculations from the assessor, do our own analysis to figure out, hey, is this correct or not based upon our analysis and modeling? And chances are it's not correct. And
really,
depending on the property type, there's more complexity to certain property types than others, you know, and I'll give you a for instance, right? You get a million square foot complex manufacturer in a small town, which is where your GMs, Fords, you know, Hondas, yep. Toyotas of the world, they're putting plants all over the place in these small markets because they've got some labor force to work with and they're not having to fight everyone else for those employees, yep. Right? And so they come into the small town. You know, how many times do you see a million square foot property like an industrial manufacturer selling in a Timbuktu small town in the United States? It almost never happens. So how in the world is the assessor even supposed to estimate the value for a property like that if they have no transactional sales to base their market value estimate on? They're kind of stuck with this insurable value model, which is replacement cost less a linear appreciation that almost always is different than the true market value. And so they really have no hope for estimating the correct value scenario.
Yeah.
Because what they should be doing, and this is what we do with a property that is more of a limited market property or limited transaction type property like that, is we'll expand our search beyond just that county to maybe a statewide, possibly a regional search, or maybe even national, depending on how large the property is, because we're trying to replicate what the typical buyer would look like and what their behavior would be if someone were to be looking at such a property to acquire, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how many assessors have national comp databases to even estimate that value? They just don't, right? And we do, and we pay a hefty premium every year to subscribe to all these transactional databases that help us as a starting point with that evaluation. So you can kind of see the bigger they are, the harder it is. Well, the same is true with certain property types in that, you know, with a senior care or a hotel, when you see one of those properties sell, it's almost always a business sale. In other words, the real estate transacts, but everything in it, including the business personal property, including the name rights of that flag, Hilton or whatever it is.
Yep.
And that represents a franchise and an intangible value that goes above and beyond the real estate and should never be taxed by that county assessor. Well, it's extremely hard to extract all of those elements of value from the business value. It's a very complex model, and most assessors don't know how to do that. They haven't been trained to do it. They're not appraisers. They don't have that experience. Same with senior care. If it sells, it's almost always the business sell.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of intangible value with running, for instance, a licensed nursing home that involves, you know, on-site therapists, on-site nurses, a management team that knows how to maintain the license that requires certain service levels for all of the patients that stay in those skilled nursing sites. And so there's a hefty intangible amount that is really challenging to quantify along with the real estate and the business personal property. So those property types are what I'll call total asset value property types that need some complex modeling to unbundle all of the non-real estate components to just get to the real estate value. So whenever there's a lot of added complexity, the chances of the assessor at the county and or the state missing the mark on the fair market value of the real estate is extremely high. It's almost always a situation. And the value differential can be as high as 50 to 70%. And so,
Wow. that's a lot of money, man. When you're talking about, that's a lot. But it makes sense because what you're saying in the skilled nursing and the resorts or hotels or anything that you're selling the business along with it, they're likely looking at the business transactional value and using that for the value of the property or with some.
That's exactly right.
Minor adjustments, but you know, you look at it and you, it could be vastly different depending upon the income generating characteristics of the property, you know, what they've all got for facilities and equipment and everything else in there. Wow. This is,
when you look at the fact that this is an ongoing issue, right? This is an ongoing, I've got sins in my closet. Those sins are going to keep going without a true fix. Right. And that's what we provide is that fix, you know? And so, you know, I'll just point out a senior care, you know, client that we've had now for about 10 years, you know, they have about a dozen sites, and our scorecard to date, we've saved them $3 million in annual in their property tax levels. That's a cumulative number and it's growing every year.
12 sites, you saved them $3 million in property taxes. My goodness.
Yes. We've averaged $300,000 a year on probably a $1.2 million property tax bill in total. So we've saved them 25%.
Oh, my goodness. So now, and this is not a one and done kind of thing because you have to go back do they reassess every year on property? So say we get it right this year. We go appeal, we get it right this year. Do they bounce it right back up again or it's dependent or what? You're always monitoring to see what they do. How does that work usually?
Well, it depends on the state and it depends on if the business is expanding, right? Because new construction is going to trigger a reassessment. Even remodeling may trigger a reassessment. Oh. And that's the thing with a hotel or a senior care is they constantly have to look to remodel to keep their business intact. Right. And so if they do enough remodeling, they're going to be reassessed and they're going to be having to fight the value again. The other thing to keep in mind, Damon, is that each state kind of has their own process for reassessment and their own cycle. You know, in some states it's every year. You know, Texas is a good example of that. In my home state in Indiana, you know, we reassess with trending every year. In Iowa, it's an every odd year. So every 2 years, you're going to see a complete reval. In Ohio, it's a triennial. So every 3 years. In Kentucky, it depends. In Tennessee, it's four. So you got to know your state. You got to know when you're going to be revalued the property. Well, you've got to know the trigger points for that, you know, and whether your new construction project is going to trigger an increase as well. So it's not an easy answer. And whenever there's not an easy answer, it breeds chaos and you need someone to come in and build that transparency to keep everything in check and the accountability that's so important.
Yeah. So you're actually with your clients, you're looking at every year because, okay, did something trigger it? Did we, did it change or not? And some years you're going to say, no, everything's fine. And the next year you go, okay, we're on a reassessment or cycle and we're going to have to go back in and review everything again.
That's right. Yeah.
No rhyme or reason, really.
Yeah. And that's the thing when you're a property manager, controller, or CFO, and you have properties across state lines, each state kind of does their own thing, as I mentioned, right? So you really need someone who can manage that portfolio and, really put a work plan in place that covers your basis with timing, deadlines, appeal procedural rules, the credentialing that you have to have from one state to the next, knowing, what state does something some way to tax certain property for business, personal property, and other states that don't. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts and variables, and it's an extremely challenging and complex process to do a portfolio review to properly manage the property taxes. And it's ripe for pitfalls. It's ripe for errors. Yeah. And it's ripe for overpayments. And essentially that becomes our job to make sure that we're advocating for that business, for their best interests, that we're helping them steer clear of those pitfalls, aware of the timing, the deadlines, the way properties value. And then we're navigating, the appeals or the amendments through to the end. And then ultimately helping them validate that they achieved savings, as mm-hmm. a result of settlement activity or an agreed upon value, by that county or state official.
Wow. Wow. Josh, this is awesome, man. Thank you. I mean, I had no idea that you really could make this much difference in a business. Your real estate taxes, your property taxes, your inventory, equipment, all these kind of things. But now after talking with you, I understand that if you've got a business, like you said, your skilled nursing, 12 facilities, a mall, I got manufacturing facilities that could have multiple states. And I've been in those companies before. We had them in multiple states and we owned the property and those kind of things that where you've got hundreds of thousands of square feet all over. Hey, you really need to be looking at your property tax bill with a different perspective and finding experts that can actually help you make sure it's right.
Yeah, if you're not paying attention to your property tax levels, you're wasting a lot of money as a business owner or a property owner. And it's really incumbent on a company to not be satisfied with how they're being taxed and even more so to bring in someone with the experience that and the knowledge and the wherewithal to take care of managing their property taxes properly. Because otherwise mm-hmm. they're leaving money on the table. And, it can over time, it'll add up to a 7-digit plus impact. And then by the time they realize that it's too late on those back years, there's no retroactive relief typically, and hopefully they've got a go forward strategy to fix the bleeding, put a tourniquet on that wound.
Right? Yeah, that for sure. Well, Josh, thank you so much for stopping by today, and just sharing a bit of your knowledge about property taxes, how you can really look at reducing business property tax obligations and your expertise. So what's the best way if someone wants to get a hold of you?
So probably the best way is through my company website, which is www.jmtaxadvocates.com. And there's a contact us slide there that someone can use. My personal direct dial is 317-674-8390, extension 100. Okay. And my email address is joshua@jmtaxadvocates.com. You know, all of those are pretty good ways to get a hold of me. And the thing that I would just add is we provide our initial evaluation for at no cost to a business. Okay. So there's no risk for someone reaching out to us and seeing if they might be overpaying. The second facet of how our clients engage us is we only charge a fee unless we're successful with savings. And so we offer a contingency fee option for a company. And again, that's a way to offer a no risk value proposition for someone that says, hey, I'm sick of overpaying my property taxes. Let's make a run at this. But if we're not successful, there's nothing gained, nothing ventured at that point. There's no fee. And at that point, we're just kind of monitoring their value going forward, because chances are at some point they're going to need us. And we continue to monitor the property value until the end of our engagement, which may span a few years. And so we're providing that valuable service all along the way. And we're only charging when our client needs us. It's kind of like auto insurance that you don't pay for until you get into a wreck. So this is one of those no-brainer areas to borrow our experience and know-how to take care of a very important area that each financial leader should care about with managing their property tax levels.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Josh, thanks so much for stopping by today. And I want to just encourage the listeners out there, if you're here on LinkedIn or one of the other places where we're live, I want you to go back and rewind this if you want to learn more about mitigating your or reducing your business tax, property tax obligations here. Josh dropped a lot of great, great tidbits of knowledge, things that you can consider. And then go back again too. He left his email, his website address, jmtaxadvocates.com, to go there and get some more information. But hey, thanks so much for being here today, Josh. We're going to shut down for now, everyone. And we'll be back again later this week. Josh, hang out for a moment. We'll end up, we'll finish up when we're offline. Thanks so much for being here today, Josh.
All right. Thanks, Damon. I appreciate the opportunity.